I remember real specifically a guy amazed that I was running these trails with without a shoe. And right about the time he said that and passed me, he was wearing big Hokas or something. He just slammed the front of his foot into a rock and his just face plant just bang. It was a loud, scary slamming into the dirt.
Mm-hmm.
Right away, he looked over at me and he said, "Gosh, it's a good thing I wasn't wearing those sandals." Because I didn't want to say anything at the time, but I was thinking, if you were wearing these sandals, you never would have kicked that route.
You're listening to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, and this is Trail Talk, where we have casual conversations with all kinds of runners. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. Whenever trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where our conversations might go. So there aren't too many topics that are off limits for us. So if you're ready, let's get started.
Perfect.
So hello, welcome to another edition of Trail Talk Live, Ultramarathon Mindset. I have a guest here,
yes.
Randy Kreil. I have seen him on Facebook. He's in several of the groups that I'm in. I have I've seen some of his videos on YouTube, and he just ran posted about his run about the Cloud Splitter 100, and I thought he had such a good story about finishing that race that this is a guy I want to have on and talk to, because I think he really kind of demonstrates what ultramarathon mindset is about. He has a pretty good resume of ultra running and a lot of years. So I am really looking forward to getting into this trail talk and finding out a little bit about who he is and letting him share his story with you. So Randy, welcome.
Thank you.
To Trail Talk.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So what I usually try to do start out is what I would do is if you and I were headed out on the trail to run together, I just kind of ask, how did you get started in running, and what led you to running kind of ultra marathon distances?
Good question. It's hard to pinpoint that. In my teens and 20s, I did a little bit of running. And then in my 20s, quite a bit of running. I did some triathlons, mostly like sprint distance, or what they used to call Olympic distance triathlons. Mm-hmm. Was maybe lucky to be middle of the pack. But I had an interest in endurance sports in my early 20s, and was kind of intrigued by the Ironman back in I graduated high school in 80. It was around that time the Ironman was starting to gain popularity, and I was intrigued by that. And I always really kind of thought I didn't have the genetic makeup to be able to do anything like that. But anyways, I got into doing shorter stuff in my 20s, then early 30s, got married, had kids, you know, was into kind of building houses by owner and selling them by owner. And I got real distracted from the running and the triathlons and got out of weight, out of shape, overweight, ended up with thyroid cancer in late 04. And that was a real game changer. And it sort of took a few years of researching, trying to figure out everything I could do to minimize my risk of ever having a cancer recurrence.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was late 04, 05, early 05 treatment was finished. And it took kind of a couple years of getting clear signals to really kind of feel like I sort of moved past the cancer scare. And then in early 2010, I read Born to Run, which is how, of course, a lot of people have gotten into ultra running and barefoot running and sandal running. But I kind of, the book came at a perfect time to me. A lot of things about it resonated. And I ended up really adopting kind of all of the good habits of the Taru Amaro, the Raramuri, in terms of I went 100% plant-based diet. They're mostly plant-based, organic, where they live in the Copper Canyons there, and the traditional lifestyle. And I got into barefoot running, minimalist shoe running, and sandal running. all within that first 6-8 months after reading Born to Run.
Okay.
And pretty quickly then, once I changed into minimalist footwear and barefoot, along with the diet changes, it was just a few months after I adopted all of it that I ran the first 50K, which would have been early 2011.
Okay.
So I've done, 65 or so official ultras since then. So it's pretty much been nonstop. But I guess backing up just a little bit, on my 50th birthday, I did do a full do-it-yourself Ironman, unofficial Ironman triathlon.
Wow.
And so I that was a big thing. It was something I really didn't think I could do. My brothers were athletes. I didn't do any sports in high school. Mm-hmm. Sleeper, late bloomer, whatever. I just didn't do it. And I just had a belief system that was wrong, that I wasn't an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
But I figured out, I proved on my 50th birthday that I kind of was. Yeah. I did the 16 and a half hour full iron distance do-it-yourself triathlon.
And okay.
That was neat. But then basically the process of going minimalist, having one injury early in that process, and it basically led me to where I never used my road bike after my 50th birthday. It just sat and collected dust. In fact, I finally sold it this year. There was a shortage of bikes out there. I was able to get a fair price for the used bike. But basically, I enjoyed swimming. I enjoyed biking, but I decided to go all in with the running. And early 14, that led to the first 100-miler, which was on a gravel towpath near Harper's Ferry, Maryland. And I just fell in love with it. I ran it first 26 miles in a thin pair of sandals, fairly thin. The second lightest kit sandal from Zero Shoes.
So okay, the 4-millimeter?
It was the 6-millimeter.
It's a 6-millimeter. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
They had 4 and then 6 or 5.5, whatever it was. It was the little bit heavier one. I think I'm virtually certain I wore that one, but it was fairly well worn. So I think it was probably down to about 5 because of the wear pattern that was on it. I realized about 26 miles in that I was really going to need a little bit more. So I wore a super lightweight, size 4E wide New Balance zero drop shoe, probably the most minimalist thing they ever built.
Mm-hmm.
And that got me through it. But by 95 miles or so, my feet felt like they had shards of glass in them. Every step was really painful. yet I knew I was going to finish, and I knew I was going to be back to that same race. Mm-hmm. I ended up doing it 6 years in a row and missed this year's.
Okay.
But I just enjoyed everything about running that first 100-miler and did it with, no pacer, no crew, minimal shoes, testing my diet ideas, doing the all plant-based diet. And
So you said you're talking about that you started running minimalist after you ran, after Born to Run, and you said it was a few months and then you did your first 50K. My question is, how quickly did you transition from when you read Born to Run to transition to actually do that kind of distance?
It would have been, I think February when I read the book, 2010. And I had a broken tibia on my right ankle. So okay. The big inside bone on the right ankle, I broke that messing around in the yard. And that was before I took up, I was 08. So it was kind of before I got back into the running and such. So I rehabbed it by doing a lot of long walks. And I was getting to a point where I knew I needed to try to strengthen my ankles. So I one day, right before I got the Born to Run book, I went out and bought a Bosu ball, and I was going to stand on the Bosu ball while I watched TV and strengthen out my ankles. And as just by a dumb chance, I went out to a shoe store in Xenia, Ohio, a very small independent place. called Xenia Shoe and Leather. You can buy Birkenstocks and work boots and have your horse saddle repaired. There's a leather repair shop that
okay. has mm-hmm.
a really interesting array of footwear. And the guy's also an orthotics expert. So anyway, this particular day, I went and got my Basu ball, left Walmart, went to Xenia Shoe and Leather, and we were busy that day. It was a Saturday, and I knew I wanted to talk to the owner, so I had to wait. And as I was waiting around, I noticed they had these Vibram Five Fingers and a copy of the book Born to Run that I'd never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, I was there long enough to get wrapped up into that book.
That's pretty easy. It's a good book.
Phenomenal. It really is. It only took a couple chapters, and I knew I had to go straight to the bookstore after the trip to the shoe store. So, but I was really intrigued by the fact that the orthotics guru now had these completely minimalist Vibram Five Fingers in stock.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, how do you go from being an orthotics expert and selling people all this foam and padding and stuff to make your shoes even bigger and heavier to almost nothing, like basically a sock on your foot. And he just had a huge paradigm shift, and I was really intrigued by how that could happen. And so anyways, listened to him, bought a pair of the Five Fingers, went to the bookstore, bought the book. I've probably read it at least six or eight times,
mm-hmm.
But due to read it again. So that's kind of how that all started. It would have been February. And right away I was doing a lot more barefoot time around the house,
mm-hmm.
kicking chair legs in the dryer.
Yeah.
I'm banging up my feet cause I'm not aware of what's mm-hmm. going on. And really at my age, I'd worn bad shoes for a lot of years. I was in my late 40s. So I was in a situation where I basically needed a lot of rehab work. Plus I was trying to build up to running more and running more minimalist.
Mm-hmm.
So with the Five Fingers and doing some actual barefoot walking and running, and some, I got some cross country flats. And
okay, yeah.
So I was transitioning out of my old stuff and into all this other stuff. And that happened fairly quick. So then it was, late September, I got that first pair of 4mm, $20 kit sandals from what's now Zero Shoes, was called Invisible Shoes.
Okay.
And that was when things really advanced quickly, because the Five Fingers weren't working out. They hurt my toes. The cross country flats were good, but they were not ideal. And they're still a shoe. And when I put the sandals on right away, first run, I realized these things are going to teach me how to pick up my feet properly. I'm not going to be able to shuffle my feet. Because
mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. if you do that, they're so thin on the outsole that it kind of rolls underfoot and
yeah.
stags
yeah.
the ground.
If you drag your toe, they fold under.
Yeah. if you're shuffling, even if you don't pick up your feet in the grass, you're going to snag them all the time.
And mm-hmm.
it can happen on blacktop if you get lazy. So right away, I kind of fell in love with the feel of the open air. Feeling the grass and the sun and the breeze and just all the nature on my skin on my feet, and being without socks and with such a lightweight protection underneath. It might have been right before. It was probably right around that time frame that I had picked up a clear piece of glass in my foot, and
wow.
luckily figured it out and was able to dig it out on my own. But basically I had gotten a little bit scared of true, pure barefoot running.
Mm-hmm.
Bike trail near our house is by a busy street. So it's, there's always going to be some glass out there. Got those sandals and spent a number of weeks, I guess, trying to come up with a custom lacing system that would allow me to run the Xenia Marathon in early March completely hands-free. So 4mm, the thin kit sandal mm-hmm. with my own lacing method, and it worked. So I had a decent time at the Xenia Marathon, ran it, no socks, thin sandals, thin outsole. It was pretty flawless. And so I was ready to move on to a 50K after that.
Okay. So, okay.
Yeah.
So you were able to get your feet in shape in a pretty quick amount of time then.
Fairly quick. Yeah. I think, I have to think about the timing. At some point when I did do the first 50K, I ended up doing it on a stress fracture. So I learned it's been over 9 years. And that was where I learned a lot about awareness, healing, and personal preferences in terms of running versus the biking and the mm-hmm. swimming that I was able to do during the healing of the fibula, the right side of the ankle, all same ankle. The left ankle was broken on the right side, the outside bone, a stress fracture. But mm-hmm. I was so green at the time at that first 50K, I didn't even really know what a stress fracture was.
Yeah, because I know a lot of people who run minimalist. I mean, I've heard advice of, you know, some people taking even a year to get their feet in shape, and you know, my journey was a lot faster than that. But there was still, you know, there's still a process of.
Yes, I pushed it too far, and I tried to tell people to slow it down for that reason.
Yeah.
It was a combination of all the energy I was getting from my diet change. I felt phenomenal. I was losing weight on the all plant-based diet. And to get ready for a 50K, I overtrained. I actually did one of my workouts was a 4-day, 8 miles, 4 times in one day. So I was overtraining for the 50K. So I learned a lesson there.
But. Yeah, that's a lot. So you were able to run barefoot. You ran barefoot and plant based.
That was a real key. And have you read Born to Run recently?
I've read. I read Born to Run after about halfway, like 6 months into my. Start of barefoot running
after the barefoot.
Before.
Okay. That's
interesting. It was actually from Hoka Speed Goats. And, I was running in ultras, and for a lot of reasons, the ultras failed, they broke down, and I was dealing with a small independent shoe store, and they couldn't get any more of that model because of something going on with the company, with Ultra, mm-hmm. the company. Mm-hmm. So the big box stores had plenty, but it was they were going to warranty these for me because I got 200 miles on them and they fell apart.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. And so, they switched me over to Saucony, Peregrine, and they had difficulty with those. I landed on Speed Goats, which were a little bit too narrow for me.
Uh-huh.
And, when I was about 58 miles into my 100, and I felt like somebody had driven a knife into the top of my foot.
Ooh. Okay. The top of the foot pain is a common thing you hear in barefoot chat rooms or whatever.
Yeah. And so I could only, I couldn't run. Every time I tried to run, it hit me. And the best I could do is walk. And about every mile, this pain would come back. And so, you know, I'd loosened my shoes up. I did, you know, did as much as I could to try to alleviate that. I ended up walking the rest of the 100. So, you know, I have a pretty fast walk. So I was able to finish in under the, you know, I was able to finish under the cutoff time.
Good.
So, you know, and finish. So that worked out well. But my foot hurt for like 3 months after. Uh-huh. And I've been reading about barefoot before. But that was the thing that really decided, you know, it's like these things just kill my feet.
So I said.
First of this year, I bought the Zero 4mm Arachi.
Okay. The Genesis.
The DIY.
I've gotten so spoiled with the Genesis.
I've seen the Genesis ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then I ended up with my own lacing system. I put a different lace on and actually wrapped my ankles more like the traditional Karamara look, you know. So that was my first jump into barefoot was with those.
Perfect. And, that's a good way to learn it. Cause when you have to put a lot of thought into making the laces perfect. So where they mm-hmm. won't change. They won't shift where they shouldn't shift at the, sometimes you get it just right, but they'll shift it here. Mm-hmm. And then it messes it up. So I had knots and chubu, and it took a while. It took a lot of thought and time to get it just right. And I made a video about that. And when my channel got hacked, I lost that video and it's not backed up. So
oh, no. Oh.
I don't even know how to do my old Lacy system anymore. So with the modern stuff, I don't have to. I'm not sure if I'd ever bother, because I know for $40, I can get a pair of these and they'll last forever.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And they're, so you've run in the Genesis, you've run some long distance races in those.
I don't typically use this as a trainer.
Do you use that as a trainer? Okay.
But this year, due to COVID, I did some different things. I created my own, a couple of 100-mile runs, and both of them I ran all the way in zero products.
Okay.
So the first do-it-yourself 100-miler was one where I ran – no, I'm sorry. It was the second. I ran like the first 44 miles in these 4-millimeter Genesis sandals.
Okay.
Which was by far the longest I'd ever run. I still had to get to 100. So then I used this one, the HFS from Zero Shoes, which mm-hmm. I knew would work. And then I think I put for 120 miles at the end, I used the Zero Mesa. So I was trying out some of their different shoes mm-hmm. For a do-it-yourself 100-miler. Because I had done two do-it-yourself 100s. The first one, it was Mother's Day weekend. Polar Vortex came back into the all the weather people were talking about Polar Vortex.
Mm-hmm.
Very
mm-hmm.
cool Mother's Day weekend. So I planned on wearing sandals, but I shifted to the Zero HFS.
Okay, yeah.
And that kept my feet warm. And I ended up wearing them the whole 100 miles. So that was the first time I'd ever run 100 miler in shoes, because I always wear sandals.
Mm-hmm.
For most of the 100 miles, it was 100% of the way in sandals, usually without socks is what I try to do.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So how do you, I've not run that kind of distance, but how do you ever have trouble with the straps or straps chafing because of grit underneath?
Yeah, actually. this sandal is, mm-hmm. Bedrock Cairn Pro, and you can see it may not be obvious. If you'd seen it new, you'd know that I've punched all kinds of holes in it, and I've carved it with a knife, and I've used a belt sander in certain places, and I've made a bunch of custom tweaks to it. But it has fairly wide laces as opposed mm-hmm. to round straps on the Genesis, which gives it a little more side stability. So for a rough mountain course or a lot of mud, this is kind of this becomes the minimal that I need to do something like Cloud Splitter or Superior mm-hmm. 100 or Falls 100 is a really tough race in Kentucky that I ran back in last December. And I wore this pair of sandals. There weren't water crossings really, but there were a lot of wet, muddy areas. And it was a course where the first year only 3 people finished it for the 100-mile distance. And last year, I think 28 started and only 9 of us finished. So that was the first time I'd ever finished a 100-miler with a finish ratio lower than 50%, like way lower. It might have been mm-hmm. lower than 30%. It was brutal. But I did have a problem with exactly what you're talking about, because there weren't places. It was in the 20s and 30s for a lot of the race, and there weren't really water crossings. There were just a lot of muddy places.
Mm-hmm.
So the grit dried onto the inside of these wider straps,
mm-hmm.
created an even wider abrasion on the skin. So
at that
particular race, I did find a ditch with some water in it, and somebody else's crew helped me clean my feet off. So then I got the sandals back on. But then at some point in the race, 50, 75 miles in, whenever it was, I realized I was going to have to put some socks on. Luckily, I had some toe socks.
Mm-hmm.
That saved the skin. But generally, no. Generally, I can put a sandal on, whether it be something like this or less of a sandal, maybe something like this.
Mm-hmm.
lighter and thinner. Generally, the gravel shakes out, or if I get mud and grit, usually there's a stream or something to wash it out with. So I
okay.
rinse. So yeah, I mean, I've now done 18 official 100 milers plus the two do-it-yourself ones that I treated like races. They were 100 miles. They were fundraiser runs that I set up. So 20 100 milers, and then the four DNFs did not finish hundreds, were races where they were really tough courses, and I made it at least, you know, 100K, 62, 64 miles, on up to like 99 miles. I ran 99 miles at Mohican, and I missed the finish by like a mile and a half because I timed out.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten lost at courses or just flat out timed out, but I love to run, so I've never actually quit. It's just I've run out of time, like you mentioned at one of your races. So.
Yeah. And the thing that I noticed this summer was that there's a lot of humidity here in Kansas this year, really high humidity. I mean, like it affected me worse than it did last year.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, had times I couldn't even really go, but I had my feet would get wet because the sweat from my body was dripping down on my feet.
Yeah.
And so I had this, it was almost like running in water, and you know, the people who wear shoes have the same problems. You know, they would get blisters because the sweat from their body would run down and their shoes would be soaked at the end of the run because of everything, you know, all that moisture goes down.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but I had, so the dust then turned to mud and grit on my feet.
Exactly.
And it was, and I was just even in training runs. I thought, and so in my mind, I was thinking, okay, how am I going to do this if I have to run 100 miles with this kind of abrasion, with only, you know, like 12, 13, 15 miles? How am I going to do 100 miles in these? And
washing your feet and I always put Body Glide on my feet before 100 miler and then reapply during the race.
You reapply down around the straps just to kind of ease that. Well, okay.
What I would typically do is apply the Body Glide to the inside of the sandal
straps. Okay.
Before the race starts, and then apply it very generously before the race start on the skin of my feet, top and bottom.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, sometimes that moisture from the lubricant or the skin lotion, it turns to mud because the dust.
And, yeah. And I would think the Body Glide would also attract dust.
Yeah,
it would get dust and dirt in it.
Like sandpaper on your skin.
So, yeah, that's kind of what it felt like.
Yeah, sometimes it's a matter of just wiping the feet off, or sometimes I just cave in and use socks. that helps usually with that.
Because one of the races that I had thought about was the Javelina 100, and that's run in the desert. And I know, I mean, the sweat wouldn't necessarily be as much of an issue just because of the, I mean, not like running in humidity. I mean, the heat is different. So I wouldn't expect wet feet, but there's still a lot of grit and dust that would get in your sandals. And so that was a consideration I was thinking of.
I think it would mostly just shake right out for me. I wouldn't worry about it. Like if I were in Michigan, summer where there's lots of sand dune, lots of sand up there. I was up there the summer I ran in sandals, had no problem with the dunes or the sand.
Oh, okay.
It just shakes right out. Generally, one of the things that I heard early on was that we lose approximately 26% of our excess heat through via our feet. So when I'm at a hot race, I feel like if I'm in sandals, which I always am, I've got an edge because I'm not going to be, I'm less likely to overheat than the other runners.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's interesting because, you know, wool socks is the kind of a big thing to keep from having blisters.
I don't know. If I wear my sandals super loose, if I wear shoes, I wear them as loose as possible. Usually I can just take them off my feet, put them on my feet without doing the laces.
Okay. So that would help. I would imagine if you had fairly loose.
I recommend people wear their shoes just as loose as they possibly can. But some people, I've talked to other guys who have run more ultras than me, and they swear that they tighten them as tight as they can. I don't know how they do it. After about 25, 30 miles, your feet swell up anyways.
Right.
You need to loosen them if you have them tight in that case.
So I guess for anybody who's listening, I apologize for these being technical barefoot running questions.
Yeah.
I bought some Luna sandals that are about 11 millimeters total, just because some of the technical stuff was.
Yeah.
I think they have them
even thicker than that though too.
Yeah, I know they do, but I didn't want to lose all the ground feel.
Right.
But I found if they're loose, I tend to catch rocks. And then also on technical stuff, my feet slide around a lot in them, especially when the bottoms of my feet are wet.
Yes.
So do you have that? Do you get that when you're?
Yeah, I've got one of my trekking poles here. I use these a lot for ultras.
Okay.
And that's tricky when you're in sandals because, you know, there's a carbide tip there and I've poked holes in my feet.
Another thing to concentrate on besides where your feet are going, right?
Yeah. But I mean, with the poles, I've been able to deal with a lot of really slippery, rough technical stuff. Not sure I could do it without the poles.
Okay.
And with this particular sandal, the cairn, it's got a lot of extra side support to it. So it's a little bit more stable when you're sliding down a muddy hill or whatever.
Yeah.
There's more there. We were talking about dealing with the technical stuff and the sandals. With the combination of using the pullet wools for balance and I keep the sandals pretty snug. With the more technical it is, the tighter I lace them up.
So if it's a technical course, you do tighten them up a little bit more.
Try to keep them as snug as possible so they're not sliding around as much.
Yeah.
But also one of the weird things I've done over the years is I put a lot of Body Glide on my feet, so it's like having mud on the bottom of your feet.
Mm-hmm.
And you're sliding all over it, and I practice running in my sandals that way. And so I don't really. It doesn't bother me that much if I get mud underneath my feet on the top of the outsole of the sandal.
Mm-hmm.
I can run fine without. I guess I'm just kind of used to
because you've practiced it.
Yeah, but yeah. By accident. and another kind of in that same thought process. I remember being at the Tunnel Hill 100 course. If you're familiar with that one, it's like 100 miles of small gravel.
100 miles, yeah, and it's fairly flat, if I remember right.
Flat, very flat. And I don't know, I must have been 50, 60 miles into it, and I was realizing I was getting really frustrated because I kept having to kick the gravel out underneath my feet off the top of the sandal. And finally, I just realized my feet are trying to tell me I need to change my form. Instead of getting mad at the rocks, I need to figure out how to run without kicking up gravel and sand.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just had to kind of stop, slow down, refocus. It was late at night and I was tired, but I had to just kind of get back to the very basics on efficient, smooth barefoot running form and tighter steps. Keep your feet underneath and pick them up, no shuffling. And once I did that, you know, I didn't have to worry about rocks getting up there in the first place.
Okay.
So
it was a matter of form, not necessarily the way the sandals were.
It's not really the sandals' fault. It was just, I was getting sloppy. And so I say on a smooth course, I wouldn't use the trekking poles, a flat, smooth course. But for a really rough course, like Cloud Splitter, I carried these really the whole way.
Okay.
And so when the poles stretched out and they're mostly up as opposed to actually using them, you get some biofeedback from that. So again, similar to the rocks trying to teach me something, the poles, if they start kind of bouncing all over the place, they're not moving nice and smooth, then it's like an early warning sign that, oh, hey, I'm getting sloppy. I need to take a deep breath, firm up my posture, tighten up my stride, pick up my feet, whatever it is. I need to go through the awareness of all the running techniques and figure out where I'm getting sloppy and clean it up. The sooner the better.
So a lot of people talk about barefoot running, that it helps reduce injuries. Have you found that to be the case? Yeah, have you run into any kind of injuries even with barefoot running?
Ever since that first stress fracture at the first 50K, I've not spent a nickel with an orthopedist or a chiropractor. I mean, it's been an insane number of ultras and ultra 100 milers included. Over about the last 9+ years. That first, I have to go back and look at my records. Maybe the first one was 2010, that 50K. Really, nothing that has kept me from running or I haven't had to go to the doctor for anything.
Okay.
Which is kind of unheard of. I think a couple of years ago, I read some research that showed the typical ultra runner is into the sport for an average of 3.5 years or so. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going on 9.5, 10 years, I guess, something like that, of consistent, just running in like a bunch. Before the pandemic hit, I had, I think, 15 or 16 months in a row where every month I finished an ultra somewhere. Wow. And I had that streak going. I was really kind of bummed out when the pandemic started getting to the point where my first race was canceled early mid-March. I was packed. Everything was ready to go. And I almost had left the house to drive 3.5 hours. And luckily, I noticed on Facebook an early announcement, because otherwise the email didn't go out for 2 or 3 hours after that. I would have
been
almost there. So anyways, that shifted everything. In a lot of ways, it's been good. But breaking up the routine, doing different adventures due to the pandemic.
So, and you just completed Cloud Splitter. And I talked to somebody before the race, and I had not heard of Cloud Splitter, and so I actually went and looked at the course just before, because somebody that I had run across was going to run it, and I was like, well, I'll just check it out. And and it seemed like it was a pretty good tough course.
It's tough. The first time I tried to do it in 2016, I got off course a ridiculous number of times, and the last time was kind of a fatal mistake. I was way at the most remote part of the course, and at some point I went into the woods to use the bathroom, whatever, and I came out and went the wrong ways for a long time. Oh. So I ended up timing out at about 63, 64 miles with no hope of, getting to where I needed to be. I was too many miles away.
So you didn't run into somebody going the other way?
It was an out and back section.
Oh, okay. So they just assumed that you were going, you're on your way back.
Yeah, I didn't figure it out. I think there was a long section there where I didn't see anybody, and then, it was a heartbreaker. That was but basically, it's a course. Back then, the initial Cloud Splitter course was out of Elkhorn City, Kentucky, and when I went back and ran it last year as my redemption run, the new race is in Norton, Virginia. It's very similar set of mountains, a similar profile, super technical, a 5 rating out of 5 possible for technical, and then almost a 5 for elevation change. So the new course in Norton was a little bit shy of being a 5. So it probably, based on the numbers on the website, it would be like a 4.9, but they don't call it that because it's either a 4 or a 5. Mm-hmm. Tougher. I think the Superior 100 had been the toughest course I'd finished leading up to that point. And it was a 4.4. So okay. Super technical and a lot of elevation, but just not quite 250 feet per mile average. Mm-hmm. So anyways, the course this year was modified, And I'm not 100% sure, but we're all pretty confident that it probably went from the advertised 24,400 or 24,000 feet of climbing. It almost had to be more than that. So the course got, went from 101 miles up to 103 miles, and they added more miles of really rough technical stuff to what the course would have been.
Okay.
Versus last year. So they revised the course twice before we ran it this past 2 weekends ago, and didn't find out until packet pickup that they had to change it yet again and made it longer and harder. It had a pretty high DNF and drop-down rate. I think 50 people started, but only 28 finishers, which is because they allow 40 hours of that race. It usually has, even though it's a tough race, it usually has a little bit higher finish ratio than 50, 52% or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think last year it might have been 60, 70%, something like that.
Wow.
But yeah, it's a course where when they saw me last year in sandals with no socks, people were worried about my mental and physical well-being. And it was similar to that at the Superior 100. The course is laid out. It's a point-to-point. It is a tough course, and it's a big race. So instead of having, 35 or 50 100 milers, it's more like 175 starters or more, maybe more like 230 starters. But I think they registered 270. And then there's a 50-mile race. And if you're towards the back of the pack of the 100-milers, all the 50-miler people pass us, 100-mile journey. So there's a lot of interaction with a lot of people. And being the only guy out there in sandals, which is typical for me, I ran it in sandals, no socks. The responses from people were pretty entertaining. It kind of ranged from, you are a total badass. If I had time, I would say, no, I'm a wimp. I do this because I'm a wimp and I don't want to hurt myself. But they don't want to.
That doesn't compute for people who are used to wearing shoes. That's too
far out there. And then the other response is, I just respect, you're a complete badass kind of thing. And I'm like, no. You're going to kill yourself. I can't believe you're doing that. I'm seriously worried about my ability to survive out there in that without shoes. To, you're Superman.
Yeah.
So, it was fun. Just a lot of fun interaction. I talked to one guy who ran an incredibly fast CNO Canal 100 in the really thin zero sandals with a pair of socks. And he kind of joked, you run these races in sandals and it's like you're an instant celebrity.
Yeah.
It's just funny how people notice that so much.
So over time, have your feet adapted to the more technical? I mean, so you're able to wear actually thinner and thinner to deal with the rocks, or do you always have to have a little bit? I mean,
I generally
vary your protection.
Generally, if it's a really tough course, I'll step up to this. But like at 5 weeks before the cloud splitter, I did a kind of a gravel. It wasn't a towpath. Well, I guess it was a gravel 100-mile, mostly flat gravel Pine Creek Challenge 100 in near Westboro, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. I ended up taking a pair like this that were older and more worn. So they were lighter and thinner, just more compact, compressed. And they were more minimalist than these just because of age. And I wore that for that race because I'd never been to it. I wasn't quite sure what to expect. But after having gone and ran it, I realized I could have gotten away with something even lighter. So it depends on, I have to become familiar with the course, but generally I'll maybe go a little extra just for the first time on the course. But yeah, I would say with more experience, I'm maybe more willing to take a risk going with something thinner or less less protection for a longer distance. Mm-hmm. Just better fitness over time. Feet have changed pretty dramatically. I wish I had taken pictures or video of what my footsteps looked like in the snow, like my tracks. Mm-hmm. Snow from before all this versus after. So I know that before I went to minimalist and made all these changes, my footprints in the snow were me overstriding, landing on my heel with the mm-hmm. toes pointed out like a duck. So the feet were pointed out. And each time, oftentimes when the foot hit the ground, it was a heel strike and a slide.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like a completely different animal's walk through the snow. I'm more likely to have both feet with the toes pointed straight ahead, shorter steps, no sliding.
Mm-hmm.
And the feet have gotten wider, but mostly thicker in the middle. So mm-hmm. those cross country flats that I'd bought early in this process, when I put them on now, they feel too tight. It wasn't like that when I first got them.
Right. So
the feet have changed shape. The skin, I don't know, when I look at the skin on my feet, I think it looks just like everybody else's skin.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like I've got big calluses from doing all this or anything. It's
right.
It's yeah. just mostly the shape and function.
So did your feet spread out then as well?
Yeah, a little bit. They got wider, I think. I don't think they've gotten longer. In fact, one foot has a little bit more arch than the other. So the one with less arch, when I look at them, it seems like it's a little bit longer, but I think it's just due to the lack of as much arch in it.
Arch is so, not as much.
They're not really different length feet. It's just a difference in the arches. But I think the ankles have gotten way stronger. And so people are kind of surprised. They'll watch me run through a really rough bunch of rocks and roots. And with that, I don't think I think about it much anymore, but I just sort of pitter-patter through all that without worrying too much. Looking mm-hmm. ahead, feet go over things kind of automatically while I'm looking, you know, 6, 8, 10, 12 feet ahead. People seem kind of surprised. I remember real specifically a guy amazed that I was running these trails without a shoe. And right about the time he said that and passed me, he was wearing big Hokas or something. He just slammed the front of his foot into a rock and his just face plunged. Just bang. It was a loud, scary slam into the dirt.
Mm-hmm.
Right away, he looked over at me and he said, "Gosh, it's a good thing I wasn't wearing those sandals." Because I didn't want to say anything at the time, but I was thinking, if you were wearing these sandals, you never would have kicked that root.
You'd have been
picking up your feet every time.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't have done that. So
have you ever injured your feet on stuff, trail debris?
Knock on wood, every step's a possible risk, but no, I've not really. Last year at Cloud Splitter, in the dark, first night in a really rough section, something shifted, a rock moved, and I was running in the sandals, no socks, and it felt like I maybe broke my toe. I wasn't mm-hmm. sure if maybe I tore a tendon. I never went back to look and see what happened, but I moved ahead, trying to shake out the pain, and I looked down and realized there was some blood, which was kind of a relief. Mm-hmm. I remember thinking how strange it is. It's me all alone in the woods out in the middle of nowhere in snake and bear country and thinking, oh, blood, that's a good thing because yeah. not a broken bone,
right?
A laceration, I can, and it's not too much blood, I'm not gonna have to worry about that either. So, that was probably the worst. I've had a couple, you know, every once in a while you get a little bit of blood on the toes or a scratch or something that might bleed a little bit. That was the worst one. It was a laceration under the toe, and the next day I did end up having to wear one sock on that foot because I had blood on both sides, on the left side by the toe. And on the right side, I had an abrasion that got too deep and was starting to bleed. So for 26 or so miles, one sock on one foot. but this year I kind of felt like I was cheating because I had a pair of, I don't have the socks with me. They're a pair of kind of midweight and Gingies with just one big toe pocket and then the other four small toes in one pocket. And I was, it was cold. So I thought, well, I'll just wear this for the first 8 miles up to the top of the mountain. And I maybe I'll switch out to just go barefoot. But I didn't. It was still cold and the socks felt good. And ended up getting through a lot. There were over 100 water crossings at that race. And I made it through a lot of the water crossings without getting the socks wet. Once the socks get wet, I'll take them off then. Well, once they got wet, I really didn't mind. It didn't bother anything. The wet socks were not causing any problems or discomfort. So I ended up just wearing that pair of socks the entire, my watch was showing at least 106 miles. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be 103, but I think it was more like 105-ish. And I peeled them off one time. I did actually end up spraying a little bit of Body Glide on there, and I used a foot massage tool, one of these therapy drill guns. I had an opportunity to use this from a drop bag, and so I took the socks off, put some Body Glide on, worked the feet a little bit at 72 miles in, and that was the only time I took the socks off, but I went ahead and put them back on because it was still chilly. Mm-hmm. And the straps were adjusted for the socks, and it was just, I thought, well, this is a new experiment. I'll try it, and it worked well. The new socks ended up with a hole in them, and I did take one kind of nasty spill. And I'm virtually certain that had the socks not been there, I'd have had one bloody foot again and probably a bruise. Or something.
So the socks helped keep your feet from getting scratched as well as keeping you warm.
And for those temperatures and conditions, that was
so smart. What kind of temperatures were they at? What's kind of your guide for putting socks on?
Well, it was low. It was about 30 degrees starting out down in Norton in this very small city. Pretty quickly, we were up on the park road up to the trail on the mountain. But at the top of the mountain, I think it was a couple thousand feet higher, and about every mile is potentially 3 degrees colder.
Okay.
So it didn't, well, of course the sun was rising. Temperatures were rising. It was pretty chilly at the top of that mountain.
Still pretty chilly. Yeah.
Yeah. But then, when we ended up back at the top of that mountain, that night in the dark, there was a lot of wind, and it was probably 6 degrees colder, plus the wind chill colder down at the lower grades. It was really cold. I didn't have much incentive to pull those socks off at that point.
In your normal training, then, do you wear socks as a habit when it gets wintertime?
Not very often. And there's another thing that I think I do different than most people. It's unfortunate because of the pandemic, it's probably going to change for this winter. But for the last 7 winters, I've spent a lot of hours and miles running pure barefoot at a local college arena. So there's an indoor hard rubber track, really old and worn out, near perfect for pure barefoot running. And like 8.4 loops is a mile. It's kind of like running in somebody's basement, but it's still a nice thing to have because there's a bathroom right there. There's water fountains. It beats ice and all the hazards of being outside. So I can run in shorts and a t-shirt. And then there's also the concourse around the arena, plus the arena stage. So I go out there and just do hundreds of miles. And I think that what I call a barefoot tune-up, really taking the sandals off. Because maybe earlier in the year when I'm doing easier 100-mile races, I'm wearing thinner sandals. I'm training lots in the Genesis. That's about a 5 millimeter. And then in the fall, when I'm doing the really hard races, I'm wearing something even thicker. So there's something is lost when you wear that thicker outsole, which you know. I think it's been really good to get back to that pure barefoot every winter for a lot of hours, a lot of miles.
Mm-hmm.
And then come spring for my CNO Canal 100, that's in late April. It's pretty early in the year to be ready for a 100 miler.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm always ready because I'm doing a lot of
getting a lot of
miles,
and a lot of miles there. Yeah.
Yeah. Keeping the fitness up through the winter without getting sick in the cold, you know?
So do you run when it's, I mean, do you ever go out and run barefoot on hard surface, asphalt, concrete,
barefoot? A little bit. Yeah. But mostly I like the arena right now because of the pandemic, the place is locked up. And if you go, mm-hmm. even if I could get it and I'd have to run with a mask. So
right.
I guess I'm not going to have that option for the first time. Recently I was wearing a pair of, sandals and something was rubbing. And so I think the last maybe 7 miles on blacktop bike trail, I just threw the sandals in my hydration pack and ran barefoot. It's mm-hmm. kind of a spontaneous thing. I don't do a lot of outside pure barefoot. I probably do more.
I've run some of the trails pure barefoot.
Yeah.
There's one. I mean, I've kind of monitored before when I was on sandals and it's like, okay, there's not a lot of broken glass on this one. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to do that. But I found that I psychologically, I didn't have the same, when I saw the rocks, I would slow down a lot more.
Yeah.
So the psychological barrier was there. That I just actually did better, had a better workout if I had a little bit of protection on my feet.
We years ago, a local a Dayton barefoot running group or club, and one of the guys was really pretty hardcore about going pure barefoot. And on the local trail, he picked up a nail that went into his, like the ball of his foot, and he. Mm-hmm. Surgically removed. He had x-rays of what this old rusty nail looked like inside of his foot.
Ouch.
So I'm not very likely to go pure barefoot on those trails. That image is in my head.
Oh, yeah.
One of the reasons I'm able to run so many races is because I don't have any bills, no medical bills.
Right.
Injury free and keeping my wife happy with that is important.
Yeah. I ended up putting over 100 miles on the road this year. Pure barefoot.
Yeah,
because awesome. I didn't do any road running in training last year.
Yeah.
And then the 100 that I did ended up being on a gravel road, and okay. So I wasn't prepared for it.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was a lot more difficult.
Gotcha.
But so this year is like, okay, I need to mix in a little bit. So I've got, you know, it's basically sidewalks and asphalt. And I just leave my front door and can run, and I do it in the mornings. You know, it's so the pavement wasn't hot, but so haven't done it since it's starting to get colder. But I found that actually my, you know, barefoot on hard surface was not as hard on my body as wearing shoes.
Yes, and that's what most a lot of purist barefoot people will say is that the harder and smoother the surface is, the better. The more perfect the feedback is, and that polished concrete at the university's Nutter Center at the arena, it's perfect. Absolutely, mm-hmm. it's polished, shiny, and it's hard as can be.
Yeah. So
you have to flex your legs and get light and soft and smooth, and you have to do it internally. It's create the cushion with your body. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I found that I like. When I would run in shoes on hard surfaces in the past, my hips would hurt.
Oh,
and that's the biggest thing that I noticed is that running on hard surfaces barefoot, that my hips, I got back and my hips were not aching. But in shoes and I was still, I pretty much had tried to change my running style, even wearing before I started going barefoot, changed my running style to be a midfoot striker, to keep my feet underneath me.
Yeah.
Tried to do a similar style of barefoot running. even though I was wearing shoes. And so it was, you know, that same kind of taking shorter steps, keeping your feet underneath you, you know, leaning forward, you know, a lot of the things that normally you do barefoot. I found out how poor my form was once I took my shoes off. I thought I thought I was doing really good.
That'll teach you. Another trick that Danny Dreyer, who wrote She Running, I don't know, have you read She Running?
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
He recommends running backwards. You say you start running backwards and then you sort of freeze. And that, in theory, is like your perfect form right there.
Right.
But Ken Bob Saxton, maybe you've read his book too, the Barefoot Running Book.
No, I haven't read that one.
That's a good one. Those two, I think, are the ones I'd recommend. Ken Bob Saxton, Barefoot Running Book, and then Danny Dreyer's is not a barefoot book necessarily, but
the chi running form is very, it's very conducive to barefoot running.
That's basically, there was an interesting thing in the back of that book where he talked about chatting with a lady who sold Tai Chi stuff, one of those stores that sold gear for that. And he was looking at the shoes and she said something to the effect of, I don't know how people use those thick padded running shoes because they make your feet stupid.
That's a good analogy. And they also I remember one of the things that they talked about with barefoot running is that the nerves in the bottom of your feet. Mm-hmm. And I have noticed that since this summer I've been able to go barefoot almost all summer. I mean, as far, if I'm in sandals and running, you know, but you know, throughout most of the summer I've had my shoes off.
Yeah, that feels good.
And now that it's getting cold, I put shoes on and I just like as soon as I can I get them off because I like feedback the feel of the world through your bottom, through the bottom of your feet is that really is a thing. When I first read it, I was like, ah,
it's a real thing. It's good.
It's a real thing. Yeah.
I don't know if there's anything to the earthing ideas and all that, but
you know, I've read some of that. In fact, I'd like to get somebody who's had experience with it. I ran across a runner who had had some physical, you know, had some issues, you know, with running, and started doing earthing, and it helped clear up the inflammation from his, but he wouldn't come on the show. So, man, you got a perfect story.
Interesting.
Yeah, and all of that's the thing. All of the stories that you hear from people that it's anecdotal.
Yeah.
But I've tried doing that. I've tried, you know, when I finish running in sandals of taking my shoes off
Walking on grass barefoot.
No, I just do a squat. I mean, it's just like the sit down, you know, keep your feet flat on the ground and then squat and just let my legs stretch out with my feet on the ground barefoot.
Yeah. I don't see any downside risk to it.
No, it's a nice way to just kind of relax afterwards. I'm still thinking about in the wintertime that could be interesting barefoot in the snow to ground.
But. There's one lady I know who used to live locally has moved to North Carolina, but she shovels her snow and driveway and bare feet every winter. She's once ran too far in the snow with sandals and no socks, and I got a little bit of frostbite, and that kind of spooked me.
Yeah, that would.
Yeah.
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 I was getting too confident. That was a mistake. But so I don't know. I think it feels nice to be out in the snow barefoot very briefly, but wouldn't suggest any length of time.
I can walk to the mailbox barefoot, and you know, that's I'm fine with that. But
my mailbox is too far away. Not a quarter of a mile, so.
I could probably still do that. I could probably still do that barefoot, you know, in the snow. But,
in the snow, though.
Well, I've had a little plantar fasciitis in in my left foot, and I'm not sure. I think I got lazy in my form, mm-hmm. and I think that's kind of what did it. But ice baths have been, so I've been, you know, 10 or 15 minutes of ice water, dunking my foot in it and holding it there. That's about, you know, about 15 is probably as long as I could do. I could probably do 15 minutes in the snow. But,
you're a braver man than I.
Randy, thank you a lot for being here. I appreciate it. And it's been good to get to know you. And
scratch the surface on all this barefoot stuff.
But. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I look forward to if somebody wants to get in touch with you, or how do they find you on social media? If you've got a YouTube channel, and tell us how to, because I know you do shoe reviews, and you give more stuff about barefoot running on your social media stuff
on nutrition and running and ultra running and sandals and so forth. One of the videos I did was called Top 10 Tips for an Easy 100 Miler. So there's just how to run, you know, umpteen 100 milers blister free. I covered some oddball ideas. Mm-hmm. But anyways, my YouTube channel is under my real name, and then I'm on Facebook. So those are the easiest ways.
Okay.
I'm always happy to offer people ideas and help if they ask. And there's also a blog that I don't know how many blogs I've written, but less than a year old blog, and that's accessible from from my homepage on YouTube.
On YouTube, okay.
It's just called Randy Cryle, and I've taken the vowels out of the words barefoot vegan runner. So
okay.
So it's, I don't think a whole lot of people have found the blog yet, but there's some interesting things there. Back in early August, I had a really unique opportunity to go to Death Valley and help one of the top ultra runners on the planet get an FKT for fastest known time for mm-hmm. the original Badwater course. The Badwater 135 used to be 146 miles.
And oh, wow. Okay. I didn't know the history of it. I've heard of, you know, I've seen videos about the Badwater, but it was always 135 that I saw.
It was news to me too. And I was just out on a run one day, and I hear from Harvey Lewis, he's looking, kind of last minute for another crew person to assist with this, to break this 29-year-old record, going from the 282 feet below sea level to the highest point in the continental U.S., Mount Whitney, at 14,505 feet.
Okay.
And he did it. So
wow.
We were out there, and I was out there in my sandals the whole time, crewing for this thing. It was interesting.
So is it, and I don't imagine, I mean, since it's Death Valley is where it starts. Is there a date range that you have to do? Cause I would imagine if you did it in winter, it would be a lot easier, but
yeah,
I think Badwater is usually
for it to be a valid,
valid.
Do it in July or August. And we
July or August. Okay.
We did it early August.
Okay.
And, so yeah, it was super extreme. We went from 121 degrees. Now us Ohio crew people didn't get to go to the top of Mount Whitney. We could only go to a place called Portal, which is where the road ends on mm-hmm. Mount Whitney. And a different support person went with him up to the very top, to the summit. But yeah, he went from 121 degrees down to 29 degrees in one run that lasted 33 hours and I think 32 minutes.
Wow.
So
that's a pretty respectable time for 145 miles, even not going uphill.
My little 103, 106 mile run was, took me 37 hours and 24 minutes. And there were six people behind me. It wasn't as slow as it seems. It was just a really tough course. But he did a lot of elevation, 121 degrees heat, straight through, you know, and then climb the summit after all that. So he got the 146 miles done in a fastest known time. He got Michael Ulrich's record beat, but then he had to climb down 11 miles back to down to where there'd be a car at the portal area. So it was really 157 miles.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
So the from the end of the road to the top of the mountain was 11 mile trail.
Right. Right. So anyways, you just never know. You dive into this stuff where it'll take you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had no idea this trip was going to happen. And it just kind of,
yeah. Well, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Heard about it on a Saturday, and a Thursday morning we were on a flight to Nevada.
Wow. Wow. That's cool. So, hey, thanks for being here, Randy. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And we'll be in touch.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Trail Talk. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and review. And don't forget to subscribe. That way you won't miss out on any new episodes. If you'd like to contact me, you can find me on Facebook as @UltramarathonMindset, or you can find me on the web at theultramarathonmindset.com. Remember, your mindset is the key to success in running and in life, and developing a strong mindset is a skill you can improve. Hey, thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time.